Good afternoon. This meeting of the House Resources Committee will now come to order. It is now 1:03 p.m., Monday, March 9, 2026, in Capitol Room 124. Members present are Representative Fields, Representative Kalum, Representative Hall, Representative Elam, Representative Mears, and myself, co-chair Representative Dibert. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please take this time to silence your cell phones for the duration of the meeting. Thank you all very much. And we've been joined by Representative Sadler. I'd like to thank Andrew Giannotti from Records and Renzo Moises from the Juneau LIO for staffing the committee today. So today in House Resources, we have a couple items on the calendar. The first item we'll hear from our former representative and former House Resources Chair Tom McKay on his governor's appointment to Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. After we hear from him, we will hold public testimony. Next, we will hold public testimony for governor's appointees to the Big Game Commercial Services Board, Brianna Hotch, Larry Kunder, and Robert Mumford. The committee previously heard from these three appointees back in February 20th, but we didn't get a chance to take public testimony. So today we will do that and then moved all members from committee. So with that, we will first welcome back this afternoon former Representative Tom McKay to the House Resources Committee. Tom is the only new governor's appointment to the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, or AOGCC. The commission is a three-member board, one of which must be a petroleum engineer with 10 years of experience, another who must be a geologist with 10 years' experience in petroleum geology, and a public member. And let the record reflect that we have been joined by Representative Prompts. Good afternoon at 1:05 p.m. All right, with that, thank you, Mr. McKay. If you can hear me, please put your name on the record. There you are.
Yes, I can hear you, Co-Chair Dibert. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. Thank you very much. You can hear me all right?
Yes, loud and clear. So,
all right, very well. I have just a few opening remarks for you today.
Please begin.
I'd like to say my name is Tom McKay. I'm a nominee for the public commissioner position on the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. And I'd just like to welcome Co-Chair Dibert and the members of the House Resources Committee today. As you know, the AOGCC is the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. It is my honor and privilege to serve the people of Alaska in this position. As a former member of the Alaska State House and chairman of this very committee for 2 years, I am so pleased to be with you today. I arrived in Alaska in 1980, a freshly minted petroleum engineer from Montana Tech. My first project was drilling a new oil well from Platform Bruce in Cook Inlet for Amoco Production Company. I recall applying to Chet Chatterton, the AOGCC chairman at the time, for permit to drill approval for our Platform Bruce oil well. I feel like I have gone full circle as I now sit in the same chair as Mr. Chatterton did 46 years ago. I joined the AOGCC just in January of 2026 and have found my fellow commissioners Jesse Kemelowski and Greg Wilson to be very welcoming, totally professional, and graciously helpful to me beyond measure. And I have been impressed with the experience, teamwork, and devotion demonstrated by the AOGCC staff toward the overall mission. To be honest, Co-Chair Dybert and members of the committee, this is my golden opportunity in my career to give back to the beautiful state that has given me so much, a wonderful career, and a great place to raise my 5 children and grandkids. In my career, I've worked in several jurisdictions, including Wyoming, Norway, and Indonesia, where I experienced a multitude of oil field operations and regulatory structures. Having held elective state office in Alaska, coupled with my industry experience, I think gives me a unique perspective to fulfill the public commissioner seat on the AOGCC. I feel I have hit the ground running since January and have contributed to the operations and deliberations at the AOGCC since day one. I could add much more, but feel it's best now to field your questions. I would like to announce that all 3 of our commissioners, including myself, will be in the Capitol next week for a lunch and learn on March 17th. And I'd like to thank you very much for the opportunity to be with you today.
Great. Thank you, Mr. McKay, for your testimony. I'm looking to the committee if there are any questions. I have a question from Representative Hall.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And through the co-chair, thank you very much, Mr. McKay, for being here today and for your interest in this position. My understanding is, well, I don't believe you and I have met in person previously, but my understanding is that you're a pretty staunch advocate of the petroleum industry. Obviously, you have a long work history in the petroleum industry, and I'm curious if you could identify a single instance in your legislative career where you publicly opposed interests of the North Slope producers in favor of the public's interest.
Thank you, Mr. McKay.
Well, I think the best way, through the chair, Representative Hall, the best way that I can answer that is when we take these positions at the Oil and Gas Commission, we do swear an oath to uphold the Alaska Constitution and, of course, the rules and regulations that are set forth by the commission. To be honest, since I got here in January, I have already been taking positions in the organization here, which have not made the industry happy. I believe that good engineering is essential to good industry, and we do have a few instances where we need to tighten up our engineering, in my opinion, here at the commission, and that I think that process is underway. We also are obliged to fulfill the intent of the Constitution, which means to maximize the oil and gas resource development to the maximum degree possible, and to make sure that we develop our resources to the maximum benefit of all Alaskans, including present and future residents. So I honestly don't recall a time when I would oppose the industry in the legislature, but I've already been pushing back on a couple of issues here at the commission. So I assure you that I spent a lot of time in the industry, but in this role at the commission, we need to take the public interest into account very, very carefully.
Follow up. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, and thank you very much for your response, Mr. Kay. I'm curious, are you able to expand on a situation under which you started to describe where you were pushing back on industry?
Mr. McKay. Through the chair, Representative Hall, I'm not sure that I can go into detail right now in the public record because these matters are confidential, and if some of them go to hearing, then, you know, we're a quasi-judicial organization and we're not supposed to discuss things, you know, in public. But it does relate to engineering. It also relates to the ability of the industry to, shall we say, perform their operations in a skillful manner with good oil field practices in mind. And one thing I was concerned about, now that you mention it, in the legislature was we had had some fatalities on the slope a few years ago, which troubled me very greatly. And I did, although I didn't pursue those on the legislative floor, I did go to the executive branch, mainly the labor commissioner, and discuss what was happening on the slope. And I was very concerned about it. And I even recommended at one point through channels that maybe we should do a statewide safety stand down and address the fatalities that had occurred. So I assure you that I take into account the safety of the workers. Having been one myself, I was always considered myself close to the field. I always admired the field crews. I always respected the guys doing the work in the field, and ladies, excuse me. And, you know, I always had a great respect for the folks doing the work in the field, and look out for their safety and their welfare was a big concern of mine.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you for your question, Representative Hall. Mr. McKay, we have a question from Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to scope that, I think you're still entitled to the title representative if you'd like. You've earned it. You paid for it. But what's your preferred term of address, sir? Mr. or representative? Or
through the chair. I'm trying to remember my protocol. Through the chair, Representative Sadler. For you only, I'd like you to put all the titles together in one line.
Mr. Representative, sir, great high potentate of oil and gas. No, no, thank you. Sincerely, though, through the chair, Mr. McKay, I'll go there because you're going this side. I think it might be helpful for me, at least, and the committee to understand exactly what the role of the AOGCC is. I'm not sure if we're supposed to be an advocate for the public or an antagonist to industry or vice versa. What is the charge of AOGCC when it comes to our resources in the public and industry, please?
Excellent. Mr. Former Representative McKay.
Okay, through the chair, Representative Sadler, I'll try to be brief. It's a fairly long, you know, question, but, you know, the main thing is we are in charge of maximizing the resource recovery of oil and gas by ensuring that the oil industry uses best practices in their well designs and their well placements. We ensure that what they call correlative rights are protected. In other words, if you own a lease and I own a lease, I'm not supposed to drill a well that drains your lease. So that's a simple way to put it. We're also charged with preventing waste. Waste of the resources is very important. The Oil and Gas Commission in 1977 enacted a statute where you can't just flare gas. You can't flare natural gas just for convenience. You have to have a really good reason. And we're dealing with some of those issues right now with the operators who have been, in our view, flaring gas beyond what is allowed by statute. The other thing is, you know, safety of equipment. Well control is a big part of our work, to ensure that we don't have a well control situation or God forbid a blowout of any consequence. We spend a lot of time reviewing well plans and making sure that, and of course we have field inspectors that witness a lot of the testing of the equipment. And I think at the end of the day, you know, I've had a lot of time to think about this, and you know, there's something called license to operate, and you know, the industry has a license to operate, but the state of Alaska also has a license to operate. And if we're not diligent in our oversight of the industry, then you know, we may not be allowed to drill in places like ANWR, NPRA, and other sensitive areas. So it's essential that the AOGCC is a leader, takes a leadership role in ensuring that our industry is run soundly and without major incident. I hope I answered your question.
I think so. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. McKay. We have a question from Representative Fields.
Thank you, through the chair. Good to see you, Mr. McKay. I guess I had a similar question, but to elaborate on it, AOGCC does have very expansive duties listed in statute, and I was curious how in your initial experience in the first few months the commission prioritizes those?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, it's good to see you again also. I've been here 6 weeks, so it's a little bit early, but I've already been exposed to two operators that have been flaring gas that may be beyond the allowed limit. So we're in those deliberations right now. We're also involved in we just passed on the carbon storage regulations to the Attorney General. Some of our I know Representative Dybert will remember, and Representative Mears will remember working on the carbon bills in this committee.
Oh yes.
So I find it fascinating that now we're the consequence of that work is now establishing regulations for carbon storage wells in Alaska, and we're also seeking the primacy for the Class 6 carbon disposal wells. We've had conversations about Cook Inlet gas. Anyway, there's several examples already, Representative Fields, where we've been dealing with statutory obligations just since I've got here. Yes. I hope I answered your question.
Excellent. Follow-up?
Yeah, through the chair. Yes, you did. Thank you. I had another question, sort of related. You have unique job experience having worked on the Blue Crest project in the private sector and having worked here at a time when I think a lot of people wanted to see Blue Crest assets get produced, and now you're at AOGCC, and I was hoping you could address what is AOGCC's role, and perhaps there's not much of a role, I don't know, alongside DNR when it comes to looking at what's possible with exploration and production from leases, and of course that changes as we have evolving technology and the ability to, for example, drill on land and produce more gas from Blue Crest leases, right? Could you help us understand when we have maybe leases that are economically challenging but potentially possible to produce, what role do you play alongside a necessary DNR role in pushing leaseholders to produce that gas? Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Fields, the DNR handles the leasing of oil and gas leases, which includes the revenue, the taxation levels, the royalty levels. We're downstream of that, I think is the best way to describe it. Once a lease is awarded, then it's up to the operators to apply for permits to drill, to complete summary notices for workovers and other activities. And we don't really get into the economics or the incentives for producing oil and gas. We're primarily a technical organization, and I think it's set up that way because if we had to take into account the economics, we'd probably have to have about three times the size organization, and we would be duplicating a lot of effort. And we're pretty much technical. We're geology, engineering, equipment, and then making sure that when we do get a permit to drill, or that the well is placed for the maximum recovery, and that offset owners, or like I said before, correlative rights are protected, and that there's no waste of the resource. I can go further if you want me to.
Thank you, Mr. McKay. Follow-up?
Thank you through the chair, and I definitely appreciate the back and forth, because every time we have an AOGCC appointee, I feel like I have an opportunity to learn, so thank you. So under the powers and duties of the commission, number 9, it says the filing and approval of a plan of development and operation for a field or pool to prevent waste, ensure a greater ultimate recovery of oil and gas, and protect the core of rights, which you mentioned. And I was curious, in the time that you've either worked for the commission, which is briefly, or followed the commission, have you seen a case where someone who had that experience, like you, with innovative drilling techniques, for example, was able to help push a producer to produce more, perhaps because of technological change, where maybe previously there wouldn't have been an economic way to produce a resource like gas out of Cook Inlet?
Okay, through the chair, Representative Fields, I guess my best example is with Blue Crest. I participated in the preparation of the pool rules, which were subsequently approved by the AOGCC. And the pool rules ensure that the reservoir of oil and gas is produced with the minimum amount of waste, if any, and again, protecting the offset owners. And then, you know, we did change our technology at Blue Crest. We went from wells that we were trying to frack to what we called fishbone wells, which were basically long horizontals with several, spine open hole penetrations up into the reservoir. And it was pretty unique. It had been tried in a few other places in the world. And I think we drilled 3 of those wells, and I think they're still producing today. That's probably the best, most recent example I can give you for that question.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you, Mr. McKay. We have a couple more in the queue. We have a question from Representative Elam.
Thank you, Mr. McKay. I appreciate the time to be able to ask some questions. You have quite the resume, and so I appreciate you stepping up and jumping into this seat. From your legislative background, do you see that there will be benefits for you in this new position, having the experience of having been, you know, here in resources and in this building, and then in addition with your extensive resume in oil and gas?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Elam, absolutely. My experience in the legislature gives me experience in government, and that's, I think, somewhere in the statutes for the job description that's mentioned. So I've got the technical background and the government experience background. Really, like I said, I kind of hit the ground running here on day one, and very comfortable in the job. And like I said, I've been working with the AOGCC on and off for decades. And even though I've been on the other side of the table, I always tried to give 100% to my engineering work. All my submittals to the AOGCC were, I think, very thorough. And I always tried to really satisfy every requirement that the AOGCC needed to do their job. And I always kept a really good relationship with the commission. And so now I'm on the other side of the table. I know what I expected for myself, and now I expect the same thing from the current operators in Alaska. And I will tell you, I think I probably should say, the one thing that I will not tolerate is for our state to be disrespected. And I want the committee to be assured that I will not stand for our state to be disrespected or to be treated disrespectfully or rudely by anyone that operates in our state, because we are all very lucky to have oil and gas, I think, in our state. You know, the benefits that it's given to our citizens is enormous, and we need that to continue, in my opinion. And I should probably also mention that the gas pipeline seems to be like on the front page and in a lot of conversations today, and we may be on the verge of a gas pipeline project, and that will open up a lot of potential gas drilling. It opens up a whole other field, a whole other area for industry to work in Alaska, so we look forward to that possibility.
If I may have a follow-up.
Yes, follow-up.
Thank you. I appreciate the answer. Just kind of given your background and where you're seeing resource development here in the state of Alaska, how optimistic are you for Alaska's future when it comes to oil and gas?
Could you, through the chair, Representative Elam, could you repeat part of that? Was a little bit...
Yeah.
I didn't quite hear.
No, I was just asking how optimistic are you for the future of oil and gas here in the state of Alaska?
Well, I'm very optimistic. Through the chair, Representative Elam, very optimistic. But we have to always be mindful that we are in competition with other states and other countries for investment dollars. And so we need to be careful about how we administer our industry. To use a recent example, three of our operators were just in the White House talking to the president and his administration about Venezuela. So I pointed out to my colleagues, you know, we need to be a little bit careful that we attract investment up here, that we have oil and gas activities, and we don't discourage that. And we're seeing the results of that positive attitude at several places on the slope, and we're seeing the results in the pipeline where we're actually increasing production from the slope now. And I don't think we want to discourage that that investment and that production and that activity.
Thank you.
Excellent. All right, we have couple more questions. Our former representative, we have Prox and then Sadler. Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair. Good to see you again, Rep. McKay. I think we're lucky to have someone with your experience. But you could come by every couple of weeks as you learn more and inform the legislature what's going on. So, anyway, the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission is charged with maximizing recovery of hydrocarbon resources. A couple ways to look at that, and I'm wondering if it's fairly, the regulations and statutes, in your opinion, are fairly prescriptive, or do you have enough latitude? Because economically recoverable might be something different than physically recoverable. And then if gas line moves forward, that might change many of the equations on leases on the North Slope moving forward. Do you have enough latitude to figure that out? Does the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, I should say, have enough latitude to figure that out?
Through the chair, Representative Prox, the best way I think I can answer that is to again remind folks that we don't deal with the economic side of the industry. We mainly deal with like where the wells are placed. There's restrictions on how close to a lease line you can place a gas well, how close to a lease line you can place an oil well. You've probably seen the wonderful diagrams of like a bunch of horizontal wells that look like the tines on a pitchfork. They're all perfectly straight, and they're all equally spaced apart. And that's maximizing the resource. That means that your wells are placed, I guess, you know, like a cornfield, right?
Right.
You know, to use a farmer analogy, but you don't want your corn to be too close together, right? Or it won't grow high enough, right?
Right.
Okay. And so we deal with the technical, the physical, the geology. We have geologists on our staff, reservoir engineers, production engineers, and they review everything that the operators propose, and if the operators are not meeting those rules or statutes, then we'll make them correct it. But as far as the economics go, that falls more under the industry, the private sector, the Department of Revenue, and the DNR. The Oil and Gas Commission is more focused on the technical, and like I said earlier, I think that's probably a good idea because, well, that's a big scope of work just to begin with. The economic piece would be a whole nother piece of work that we'd have to staff up for. We wouldn't want to do that, I don't think. I hope I answered your question.
Interesting. Follow-up? If I may follow up, the reason I brought it up is, 25 years ago, I was on the assembly and the Alaska Gas Line Port Authority had contracted with Bechtel to do a feasibility study, I guess, of a gas line at that point. And they came back with their study, and everybody was kind of enthusiastic about it, but we forgot to ask the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. And they put the kibosh on the idea and said maybe 25 years from now it'll be a gas field. I didn't understand anything about it then, and not much now. So I was just wondering how that might happen. And that must have been, you know, they're looking forward 25 years. And I was just wondering how it worked.
I think through the chair, Representative Prox, I think what I could add to the conversation today is the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission has issued what's called offtake orders in the past for the gas pipeline. In other words, our engineers have studied how much gas could be taken off the slope and still be able to maintain pressure and maximize the recovery of the oil resource. And those orders have been issued, those studies have been completed, and the proposed gas pipeline that's on the books right now would be within those constraints. So that's where the commission comes in, is what's called offtake. We don't determine the economics of the project. We don't deal with the pricing of the gas. We just say that you could take this much gas from mainly Point Thompson and Prudhoe Bay and a couple other smaller reservoirs and not harm the oil recovery. Okay?
Good to know. Thank you.
Great, great question. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. McKay, the questions, I think, are kind of touching on the questions of whether the commission, AOGCC, can advance or encourage or push more production from Cook Inlet or from any state land or water for that point. And I hear you saying your agency function is not really so much policy but more the technical aspects. So I guess, in other words, does AOGCC exercise judgment as to whether a leaseholder should produce or whether it can produce while protecting the resource and the public?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I think the best way to answer that is any operator who actually invests hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, to drill a well, they're naturally motivated to produce as much as possible, and so that just by its nature is, I don't see that as a problem. And the AOGCC, pushing operators to produce. That's in their best interest to produce as much as they can, because that's how they make their money and how they survive and how they recover their return on investment. So that's kind of a private sector area of business, and we're just there to make sure that we protect Alaska's interests and any leaseholders, adjacent leaseholders' interests, And, of course, we want it done safely without environmental impact because that's our license to operate. And I probably should point out there's been several instances over the history of the Oil and Gas Commission. By the way, we started our regulations in 1958 when the Swanson River field. And there's been some instances where the AOGCC wasn't very popular with the industry. And so I would like to dispel any stereotype or any misconception that we would somehow be supplicant to the industry. That's absolutely not the case. And I think the tradition of the AOGCC is that there are times when we will push back, and the industry may not be completely happy with us, but that's just our job. And I, you know, we work closely with the Department of Law. We often have a assistant attorney general in our meetings. And, you know, so there, we have a lot of, what do you call it, structure, a lot of discipline. I'm not worried about the AOGCC doing the right thing under pressure.
Follow-up?
A different line, so I'll defer.
Okay. We have another question. Representative McKay from Rep. Mears.
Thank you, through the chair. Welcome back to House Resources. I had a longer list of questions, which has gotten shortened by some good questions in conversation here today by our colleagues. But I wanted to follow up on a couple of things, and maybe Representative Sadler and I will be going back and forth here a little bit. But to go back to where Representative Prox was on the natural gas pipeline, I wanted to sharpen that discussion up a little bit. You talked about offtake orders for the pipeline. Is there other roles for the AOGCC with the natural gas pipeline from the North Slope? And if so, if you can give us an idea what they are, and if you've got the resources and tools to do any of that work.
Through the chair, Representative Mears, good to see you again. Our primary involvement in the gas pipeline is just to study and recommend and approve how much gas can be removed from the reservoirs that are being identified as the source reservoirs for the gas pipeline. And we've done that, and that's the real primary thing that we do. We don't get involved in the construction. We don't get involved in the economics, the commercial aspects. That's taken care of by the AGDC, the DNR, Revenue Department, and other parts of the, I guess, Department of Commerce, and probably just about every department there is, almost. But we have a small slice of it, and it's just with regard to offtake.
Follow up.
Thank you, through the chair, to Mr. McKay. So is that work up to date, or does that need to get reevaluated since I don't know how much time has passed since that work was done?
Through the chair, I don't have the specific dates, but we do have a recent order that we issued. I can get that to you so you can look at it. I can get it to the committee that authorizes so many BCF a day to be taken off the slope without concern for damaging the other resource recoveries. So, yeah. We feel it's current. We feel it's been adequate for the discussions so far that we're getting on the gas pipeline.
Thank you. That information would be helpful.
Yes. Yeah, we'll make sure that information, we get it from you, Rep. McKay, and then we'll get it out to the committee. And
make
I'm going
to note.
We could email you, too. I'm going to go to Representative Klum. We haven't heard from you, and then we'll go to Representative Sadler.
Through the chair, hi, Rep. McKay. It's good to see you, and I'm really, really grateful that somebody with your experience is up for this position. I think it's going to be a big plus for our state. So One of the things on AOGCC website, there's a list of customers, and they have the Department of Interior and the EPA. I'm just wondering, how much intersection does AOGCC have with the federal government? And there's so much changing on the Fed side. Do you guys deal with those federal departments very much?
Through the chair, Representative Coulomb, we do to some extent, yes. A couple of examples is we're cooperating with the federal government on the plugging and abandonment of what we call orphan wells. There's a lot of wells in Alaska that weren't properly abandoned. And in fact, we have a project going on right now where we've been abandoning. We're using contractors. We've got federal grant money, and we're plugging and abandoning orphan wells. We're on a program. We've got a schedule, and in fact, we're working on a well up in Chicoloon as we speak. The other area where we had a lot of crossover with the EPA was preparing the carbon storage regulations, and preparing to apply for primacy so that we can approve drilling permits for Class 6 carbon CO2 disposal wells, or storage wells, I should say. So, yeah, we have a lot of overlap with the federal governments from here to time to time. We also issue drilling permits on federal land, which honestly is a bit of a duplication, but that's the way it is right now. So, yeah, we have a lot of overlap with the federal government on those three issues. At least they also rely on us to manage the underground injection program for waste injection, and we stay on top of that for the operators so that we can continue to utilize that program. So I hope I answered your question.
Excellent. Follow-up? Yeah, through the chair. Yeah, you answered it. Thank you. You answered it. Thank you for that. So can you tell me, do you find, I know you have only been there a short time, is the federal government pretty easy to work with right now? Has it been difficult to partner with them on those things that you mentioned?
Through the chair, Representative Coulomb, what I've understood is that the carbon storage regulations went very well. Our team here spent a lot of time with the EPA, and they have a term, they call it crosswalk. And from what I understand, we would do some work on regulations, and then we would, I guess if I can use the figure of speech, we would walk across the crosswalk to the EPA and say, is this okay? And then go back and do some more work and go back over the crosswalk and ask them, is this okay? Because we didn't want to do a lot of work, like a year's amount of work, and then find out that the EPA didn't like it, right? Mm-hmm. So what I understand is our team here spent a lot of time working with the EPA. They have an office here in town. And actually, one of our previous DEC ladies is now, I think, the region director. So we had a lot of a good relationship with the EPA on that regard.
Great, thank you.
Great question. Thank you, Mr. McKay. Great conversation. Your answers are prompting more people to think and think of good questions and comments. So we have Representative Sadler and Representative Hall and Mears after that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. McKay, I'm going to ask you what I kind of term an interview question. I won't ask you if you were a tree, what kind of tree you'd be, but I'm going to ask you a question. You know, this is it's a great job, and I can sense your excitement for it, but it's also a very responsible job with a lot of consequences. So I want to ask my interview question. Clearly, and I know something, what excites you about the job as commissioner, and then what intimidates you or scares you about the job, given the scope of responsibility? So a two-part question. What excites you and what scares you?
Okay, well, through the chair, Representative Sadler, I guess, it's just so much in my wheelhouse, as they say. There's very few topics here that I'm not familiar with. And I get to extend my career. I guess I'm excited about that, to be perfectly honest, and give back to the state that has given me so much. And what scares me? Well, I'm not sure that there's too much that scares me, but
all right.
Well, the one the public commissioner is the chairman of, or the what do you call it, the designated ethics person. So I'm very ethical, and you don't have to worry about that. But I can tell you that I have to read like dozens and dozens of pages of ethics rules. So that's been a little scary. It's not the most exciting reading.
Follow up.
I have been a DE designated ethics guy myself, so yeah, have fun with that title. And I guess, and again, although this question has kind of been touched on, what areas, obviously a big issue in front of us is the natural gas pipeline and liquefaction and shipping program or project. What role specifically will AOGCC play in decisions relative to the natural gas pipeline project?
Through the chair, Representative Sather, you mentioned liquefaction, the pipeline, the transport. That's not in our jurisdiction. Okay. We mainly deal with the wellhead down. I'm told that we do have jurisdiction to the what they call the sales meter, and then it becomes another department's responsibility. We deal mostly with the underground, the reservoir aspects, and like I said before, the offtake. But as far as the size of the pipeline, the surface facilities, we don't have much to do with that, except if there's a CO2 removal plant at Prudhoe, it's probably going to be a class 6 or maybe more than one class 6 wells that the CO2 is injected into that we would permit.
Gotcha. Very good. Yep, thank you. Just kind of scoping what your job is again, because it says oil and gas. That does not mean all things gas. It's the resource itself below the ground. Good. Thank you. I'll defer.
Okay, great. Representative Hall.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Through the Co-Chair, Mr. McKay, I'm reading the first sentence of the summary of your resume. Could you put it in layman's terms? What is considered sour gas conditions?
Oh, okay. Through the chair, Representative Hall, that's an easy one. Sour gas is H2S, hydrogen sulfide. I worked with several projects in Wyoming and, let's see, some projects in Indonesia that had H2S. And just for your information, H2S is a second most fatal gas next to cyanide. So, fortunately, in Alaska, we have very little H2S. So we're actually very fortunate that we don't have to deal with that as a big issue. However, everyone that operates in the oil industry knows that it is possible to get some H2S just in the normal course of operation, and that we need to be ready for it. But that's what sour conditions are, is H2S. If you have really a lot of H2S, you have to design your wells, your tubulars, all your metals have to be engineered to handle the corrosive nature of the gas. And since you mentioned it, CO2 is very corrosive when it comes in contact with water. It's very, very corrosive to steel. So the class 6 injection wells and pipelines would have to be designed to handle CO2 if it comes in contact with water. I hope I answered your question.
Fascinating. Thank you very much, Mr. McKay. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Yes, we absolutely learned a lot about that a couple of sessions ago. House Bill 50, I believe. We have one more question from Representative Mears.
Thank you, through the chair, to Mr. McKay. We talked a little bit about, we learned a little bit more about the role of the AOGCC, and you started getting into a little bit about some commissioner roles, that your seat has got the responsibility for ethics. So this is a little bit of a different commission, just three members. I assume there's some parallels to the RCA and that the RCA commissioners sort of like also run the program, run the commission. There's only three of you. could you share with us a little bit more about what the role and structure is over there with the three commissioners?
Of course, thank you, through the chair, Representative Mears. I think the best way to summarize it is there are three commissioners. One is a geologist, one is a petroleum engineer, and one is a public member. One of the key, and this is in statute, one of the things that I'm supposed to be qualified in is a fundamental understanding of the oil and gas industry in Alaska, which, you know, pretty clearly, I think I have that quality. Greg Wilson is our geological commissioner, so all the geologists on the commission report to Greg. And then Jesse Kamlowski is our petroleum engineering commissioner, so all the engineers report to Jesse. And then the three of us work together as a team. They call us quasi-judicial, and it took me a little bit to kind of get a real feel for what that means. The way we work here is the highly experienced, highly talented staff, they review all the permits, all the sundry applications, they deal with all the day-to-day situations that come before us, and then the commissioners are briefed on any problems that arise, and then if there's a violation or something is contested where it requires a hearing, then the three commissioners basically sit as sort of like judges, and then the staff will be like the attorneys and the what would you call it? The prosecuting attorney, I guess. And then the operators are allowed to, you know, argue their case and rebut and go back and forth. And then the three commissioners make a ruling. We try to be unified. That's why there's three of us. I guess sometimes there'll be a vote that's 2-1. But I haven't encountered that yet, at least, and so that's kind of how we're structured. The commissioners attend some meetings, but not all meetings, which I had to get used to, because the commissioners are supposed to be kind of like impartial, not get involved in the day to day back and forth, and I guess that's kind of how we work. That's how it is in the statute. So we're just we're following the structure that's on the books. I hope I answered your question.
Great. Yep. I see no further. Okay. All right. We have one more from Representative Sadler.
Oh, yeah. Four and one, but so this is kind of a functional question through the chair, Mr. McKay. It's a little unfair to ask you too many questions, having been in the job for only several weeks here. But in your experience so far, are there any areas where the commission is insufficiently staffed or resourced to fulfill its missions and responsibilities?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I have asked my fellow commissioners that, and they recently have hired a couple more technical folks, and my fellow commissioners tell me that we're adequately staffed. So I guess I have to. That would be my best answer. Is they tell me we're okay in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Follow up.
And I should know the answer, but How is the commission funded? Is there a fee associated? Do you self-funded, or does it come from general funds? I just realized I don't know that.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, that's one of the things I had to learn. And we are funded differently. We do not get our funding from the general fund. It's a per barrel charge that the producers pay, and that's how we get our funding. And it sounds a little odd, I guess, but it's the way it's set up. And to be honest, I've never seen or haven't seen the AOGCC get told, well, we're paying you, so you need to do what we say. That I've never seen that in this work environment.
Follow up.
And if I may, thank you. I appreciate the chance. And here's a question, also a little bit out of left field. There is a separate chapter in the authorizing legislation about confidentiality. I guess I would just invite you with a very open question to speak about the confidentiality provisions. What information do you see that you can't talk about, and why?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, real simply, if you're, for example, if you're drilling an exploratory well, and you have logs and cores and flow test results, the operators can request that information be maintained confidential. In fact, highly confidential. So we have a real, we have a very stringent system here at the AOGCC for maintaining confidentiality, and we have special rooms that are double locked and all kinds of security. And we're very, very careful and very conscious of our confidentiality requirements. And so I assure you that that's a very big priority for us.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. All right. Representative Prox.
I was just thinking we probably ought to end this conversation, or he's going to charge us a consulting fee.
All right. Thank you, Representative Tomake. Thank you so much for being here, giving your time. And we're going to move on to public testimony, but I just appreciate I learned so much today hearing the conversation and the review on the Class 6 primacy and House Bill 50 that we worked all so hard on a couple of years back. So, yep. And I love your tie. I just wanted to say, great tie.
Alaska tie for the interview today.
Love it. All right, so let's see. Seeing no further questions from the committee, I will now open up public testimony on Tom Mackay to the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. So first off, is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify? Okay, seeing none. And now, is there anyone online who wishes to testify? I don't see anyone. See no more individuals wishing to testify. I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony on Mr. Tom Mackay to the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. All right. Thank you so much. I will now open public testimony. We're going to move on to our next part of the committee hearing. I will now open up public testimony for Brianna Hotch, Larry Kunder, and Robert Mumford to the Big Game Commercial Services Board. Thank you, Mr. Mackay. First off, is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify? Seeing none, now is there anyone online who wishes to testify? All right, seeing no more individuals wishing to testify, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony and all three members to the Big Game Commercial Services Board. All right. Vice Chair Mears, do I have a motion?
Madam Co-Chair Dibert, the Alaska House Resources Committee held hearings on the following appointees: Tom McKay to the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, Brianna Hotch, Larry Kunder, and Robert Mumford to the Big Game Commercial Services Board. A signature on this report does not reflect an intent of any members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals during any further sessions.
Is there any objections? Seeing none, hearing no objections, we will move forward these names to a joint session of the House and Senate. So please, committee members, stick around after the committee to sign the committee report. That completes our agenda for House Resources today. Our next House Resources Committee meeting will be Wednesday, March 11th, 2026 at 1 p.m. And on Wednesday, we will hear House Bill 276, Public Land Sale, Lease, Commercial Development, from DNR, Director Collis of the Division of Mining, Land, and Water. The time is 2:03, and this hearing from the House Resources Committee is now adjourned.